The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, my goodness, what a wonderful, beautiful day it is here in Sonoma County. And I got a special announcement. The bees are back. We were so worried about the bees. It was just amazing. Ken would go out in the backyard. We're beekeepers, and we have our bees in the backyard. And we were so worried. We didn't see any of them because it was so cold. And yesterday, there they were running around on the flowers and sniffing all over the place. And we are excited. So welcome back to our friendly bees. Anyway, we have a wonderful, wonderful show today. I have one special guest to me. Joining me on the phone will be Molly Murphy McGregor, who is one of the co-founders of the National Women's History Month. And you know, it's very interesting. Molly and I hold the history here in Sonoma County. And I want to give you a little background about the National Women's History Project. In 1980, it's called NWHP, was founded in Santa Rosa, California by Molly Murphy McGregor, Mary Russo, Stoddard, Maria Cuevas, Paula Hemmett, and Betty Morgan. And the whole point of it was to broadcast women's historical achievement. I remember walking, I went to Sonoma State with Molly McGregor, and I remember walking, we were walking to a class talking about how very little information about women in history were found. And Molly is going to talk about her journey as to why this was started and what her motivation was. Today, the NWHP is known nationally as the only clearinghouse providing information and training in multicultural women's history for educators, community organizations, and parents, for anyone wanting to expand their understanding of women's contribution to United States history. Amazing. When I went to Sonoma State in 1973, I had no idea of what it was like, number one, to be a woman, and that I even had a history. So it's an amazing place that we are today. And here we are celebrating a whole month of National Women's History. It's just very, very exciting to me. Well, I had a great weekend. You know, my birthday's March 18th, but I started to celebrate my birthday early. We went to the Flamingo Hotel and danced. A special happy birthday to my sister Fish, Evelina Molina, and Mary Norman. Happy birthday. And I know they are wishing me the same. I got to listen to a great band and a great soul singer who wished me a big happy birthday. Interesting, you know, since I will be 78, and all of a sudden everybody got so excited, they moved me towards the dance floor, and suddenly this balloon popped up and it said 78, and I went, oh wow, that really made me feel special. It was kind of funny, and then I went and I took the 78 and I put 87, I made it into 87, and I thought, boy, I hope I live that long. Lots to see in this world, let me tell you something. Okay, we have a special announcement today. I will be at the Sebastopol Regional Library tonight as part of their At the Table series, and we're going to be talking about women in history. We're going to be talking about the Commission on the Status of Women, the League of Women Voters, the YWCA, and many, many other women's groups. So I really encourage you to come. It's going to be at 7 o'clock, and that's going to be at the Sebastopol Library this evening. Well, I'm going to do something a little different this morning. Yesterday's paper was very interesting to me. In the Sunday, that's the Press Democrat here in Santa Rosa, Sonoma County. A very interesting article. It was called Surviving a Massacre is Only the Beginning. And then next to it, right to the left of it, is a headline, President Says Drug Dealers Should Die. I mean, come on, guys. You know, what are we, a nation of life or a nation of death? Well, I got so upset when I read this, especially I was reading about a young woman who was shot in the Las Vegas massacre. And how is she suffering? She can't even take food down. You know, she was shot in the stomach. And it's just, it's just heartbreaking. And I start thinking about it. I start thinking, are we a nation of life or are we a nation of death? And so what I decided to do, I just wrote a little commentary, and I'm going to read it to you right now. And first I'm going to start out with a biblical quote. Those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. That's from Matthew chapter 26, verse 52. Now, the reason I went to the Bible is because we call ourselves a Christian nation on our money. It says one nation under God. And you got all this stuff about putting God and the Ten Commandments in the schools and teaching religion. I thought, okay, let's go look at our books and let's see what it says. So let's take a look. Let's take a look at that. A Christian nation who says those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. Three women were killed in Napa, California by a military man who was trained how to kill. 14 young high school students gunned down by one of their own, a fellow student who was rejected and a loner. Every day on the news, reports of killing and bombing of women, children, hospitals, schools in Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan. Every day, I listen to Democracy Now!, every day I hear a report, X amount of people died, you know, bombing or some sort of car bomb went off. I mean, it's endless. I think to myself, is anyone out there listening to the crying or the suffering and trying to end all this horror? Their solutions are crazy. $740 billion to the military? More guns, more bombs, bigger bombs, stronger guns, death all around. And just think about this. Assault rifles are legal, and the NRA is fighting to make sure that we have everyone yelling, Second Amendment rights, Second Amendment rights, while the police show up in full gear when citizens are protesting and shoot tear gas into the crowd. No one's shouting the words, First Amendment rights, First Amendment rights. I mean, think about that. Why are we fighting so hard to protect the fetus when it's born? It has to face all this horror that's going on in this world. Who are we as a nation, as a people? Who are we that we have, that we put death at a higher value than we do life? I would like anybody who heard this to email me, to write me at Elaine@womenspaces and give me your opinion, please. It's very important. As women, we have to stand up and say no more. Our children are being affected. Our earth is being affected. Children that aren't even born are being affected. I mean, right now I'm going to become a great grandmother, and guess what? I'm worried. How much chemical does my beautiful granddaughter-in-law have in her body now that she's giving birth to a child? So there's a lot to think about, and that's what Women's Spaces is all about. It's a place to think, to gather, and to hopefully all of us will do something. So it's very, very interesting, this whole idea that I wrote. It just came out of my heart, and I just wanted to share it with everybody. And like I said, if you have any opinion or you want to agree or disagree or you have any answers, please email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. Well, that's a heavy duty thought, isn't it? You know, I'm even going to post this. I'm going to refine it. I was thinking of sending it. Maybe I'll send it in as a letter to the editor. We'll see. But I want to get it out there. We have to start thinking and asking ourselves, are we a nation that supports life, or are we a nation that supports death? Well, back to it is Women's History Month. And after seeing a cartoon in the Press Democrat in our local paper, it was a reminder that we need to acknowledge during this time two very important women. The first one is Lady Liberty, known as the Statue of Liberty. It's very interesting. I remember my grandmother telling me, my grandmother came from Russia in the early 1900s, and I remember her telling me when she saw the Statue of Liberty, Lady Liberty, she just threw herself on the ground and kissed the ground and said, oh, I'm in America. I'm going to be a free woman. The second woman is Emma Lazarus. The statue was dedicated on October 28, 1886, and the torch is a symbol of enlightenment. And Emma Lazarus was the woman who wrote the poem that lives on the pedestal of the statue. The statue was named Liberty, Enlightening the World. Can you imagine? Here we are in the United States, and we have the Statue of Liberty that welcomes all these people. The Statue of Liberty torch lights the way to freedom, showing us the path to liberty. Even the statue's official name represents her most important symbol, Liberty, Enlightening the World. It seems to me, as Americans, particularly American women, we need not to forget the history and the meaning of that important symbol. Housed in New York is one of the top tourist attractions. Emma Lazarus' famous lines captured the nature's and the nation's imagination and continues to shape the way we think about immigration and freedom today. Now, this is written about 10 years ago. I mean, look at what's going on with immigration right now. I mean, it's almost like the immigrants, which we all are, have suddenly become the enemy. It's really amazing to me. Emma Lazarus' famous lines capture the nation's imagination and continues to shape the way we think about imagination and freedom today. Written in 1883, her celebrated poem, The New Colossus, is engraved on a plaque in the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty. Now, just listen to this line. As a Jewish American woman, Emma Lazarus faced the challenge of belonging to two often conflicting worlds. As a woman, she dealt with unequal treatment, and she had a difficult experience when it came to getting work. At the same time, she had a complicated identification, being Jewish and being an immigrant. Very interesting. But yet she wrote this beautiful poem, and it's titled The New Colossus. Well, we're going to take a musical break. And during that break, I'm going to play a special song about the Statue of Liberty. But it was very interesting when I came into the studios this morning, and here I am thinking about I'm going to do this commentary about death and about the wars and all the different things that are going on. And I was also going to talk about the Statue of Liberty. All of a sudden, I saw this beautiful thing taped on the glass of the window as you walk into the station. And here's what it said. This is so touching to me because here we are. And I feel this way. I feel this way. And I know here at the station, we feel this way also. We welcome. I love that. We welcome all races. We welcome all religions. We welcome all countries of origin. We welcome all sexual orientation. We welcome all genders. We stand with you, and you are welcome here. What a feeling that gave me. What a feeling. We welcome you. We welcome you as human beings, and we want you to know when you come and we meet and greet you that you are in a safe place. Absolutely beautiful. Well, there's a lot to think about, and I have one more announcement before we say goodbye here. By the way, I mentioned that I'm going to be at the library, the Sebastopol Library. I'm going to be interviewing Molly Murphy McGregor from the National Women's History Project. She's also going to be there. So you're going to get quite a history lesson tonight. And then also there's going to be something else happening, and that's going to be Wednesday, March 14th. That's this Wednesday from 12:30 to 1:30. The Santa Rosa JC Director of Institutional Research, Casey Gurney, will present the 100-year history of women as students, instructors, administrators, trustees and more at the Santa Rosa JC. This session is held in connection with the celebration of the Santa Rosa JC's 100th anniversary. Wow. 100 years, education, the power, nothing like an educated nation. That's a powerful nation. you know, we were once very powerful. Education was, we were rated number one. I think now we're number 30. Well, anyway, it's Women's History Month, and right now we're going to take a new musical break, and we're going to play the song Give Me, You're Tired, You're Poor. It's sung by the West Los Angeles Children's Choir to honor Lady Liberty. When I return, joining me on the phone will be Molly Murphy McGregor, founder, co-founder of the National Women's History Project. This year, we are also celebrating 40 years. Wow, 40 years since the first march in Sonoma County for Women's History Week. Well, enjoy. I just want to, I'm going to say this real clearly before we play the song. On the pedestal, this is what it says. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your seeming shores. Send these, the homeless, tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. So here we go. We're going to listen to the West Los Angeles Children's Choir singing Give Me, You're Tired, You're Poor.
Like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gate shall stand a mighty woman with a torch whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips.
My goodness, I'm sitting here crying. I mean, thinking of my grandmothers, two grandmothers. One came from Warsaw, Poland during World War I, had to escape horrible, horrible persecution. And my second grandmother came from Russia, from Odessa, again, having to escape pogroms. It was just amazing. And listening to the song and hearing, remembering their stories when they told me how they kissed the ground when they came to America, it just really touches me. You know, my prayer is that we go back to this idea, what America stands for. I mean, it's just so sad. Anyway, for you just joining us, you're listening to KBBF 89.1 Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And by the way, I got an email. They want to know why I call myself Elaine B. Well, since it's Women's History Month, I might as well tell you my little bit of the history. I put the B in there because when I speak, it reminds me to I'm doing the best I can. I'm a beautiful child of the universe, and to be here now. And also, it stands for Beverly. Anyway, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my special guest joining me on the phone, a dear friend, Molly Murphy McGregor, co-founder of the National Women's History Project, housed right here in Sonoma County, California, Santa Rosa. Welcome, Molly. Welcome to your annual interview on Women's History Month to Women's Spaces.
Well, Beverly, thank you very much.
I know. I mean, it's kind of interesting. You know, when I looked up the meaning of the word Beverly, it means beaver, one who works hard. So I don't know.
They got that one right, that's for sure.
Well, welcome, Molly. You know, before we talk, I'd like to give our listeners just a little background on you. Is that okay?
Sure. Go ahead.
First of all, I want to really express the mission of the National Women's History Project is to recognize and celebrate the diverse and historic accomplishments of women by providing informational services and educational and promotional materials. And also, you know, that's why we're celebrating Lady Liberty. She is also one of our ladies. The theme of this year's celebration is Nevertheless, She Persisted, Honoring Women Who Fight All Foremost of Discrimination Against Women. Well, welcome again, Molly, and let me just tell our folks a little bit about you. Molly Murphy McGregor is the executive director and co-founder and chair also of the National Women's History Project Board of Directors. Molly is a former high school social studies teacher who has worked for over 35 years in the field of gender equality and women's history. McGregor conducts women's history workshops and women's historic sites tours throughout the country. She also works with state and national agencies on strategies and programs to help acknowledge and recognize the historic contribution of women. Her work in the field of multicultural women's history has been widely recognized, including awards from the National Education Association, the U.S. Department of Education, the National Education of Multicultural Education, and the Association for Gender Equity Leadership in Education. Molly is accessible via email, at edna.molly@aol.com. Molly, anything else you would like to add?
It's Edna's S. There's an S after Edna. No apostrophe, but it's an S because it's my mother's name, Edna's Molly.
So EDNASMOLLY@AOL.com.
Mm-hmm. Or they can just Google the National Women's History Project. I'm the one that opens the mail, so no problem there.
And also NWHP. If you put that into Google, you can get it very, very easily.
Right. Uh-huh.
Well, Molly, you know, you have such a background. I mean, I remember we went to Sonoma State. I remember walking down the aisles talking about it. I said, what? You know, like it never even occurred to me that there was no women's history. So
well,
talk
that's
about
the thing. The question always determines the answer. And if nobody's ever thought about it, it's not even this conspiracy. It's because who's thought about it? Do you know a woman inventor? Do you know a woman artist? You know, it's like the assumption has always been that women haven't been as successful and as accomplished as men, and it's just not true. But that's what we're helping. We're helping to spread the word and let folks know, let young girls grow up feeling strong, braver, bolder, and more inspired, and letting young boys grow up with a much stronger sense of the female experience and their respect and admiration for it. So that's our goal. It's, you know, it's pretty overwhelming. We've been at it now for over 40 years, but boy, there's been some changes.
Well, let me ask you a few questions here. When did you first notice? I know you have a very interesting story that there was very little history written about women in the history books. You know,
well, when I I taught high school, and in high school a student asked me what is the women's movement, and I'm embarrassed to say I didn't know. But the short of the story is that we divided up into groups and looked at the women's movement from a lot of different perspectives. And there wasn't anything in our history book, so we would have to ask new questions. You know, the pioneers went west. How did that impact women differently than men? How did it impact Native people rather than the white settlers? You know, to really bring out the complexity of history. We were only seeing it in a very one-dimensional fashion. So I came to Sonoma State because I entered the master's program in history there. And most significantly for me, I entered women's studies. And that completely changed my life because women's studies was asking and making assumptions that, of course, women had always been grand and terrific. I mean, J.J. Wilson taught a class on women philosophers, of all things. So with my work at Sonoma State, I became very much involved with the Commission on the Status of Women. And I was teaching women's history at the community college, and women in my class said, oh, you know, Molly, we just missed it when we went through school. Let's see what our kids are being taught. And so of the 5 to 7 books they found on women, and they went to 3 different libraries, school libraries, they hadn't been checked out in anywhere from 3 to 15 years. And they hadn't been checked out because those teachers were like me. They didn't know any women's history, so why would they assign it?
Molly,
so it was at that point we went to the county schools and asked them to initiate the week of March 8th as Women's History Week. March 8th is International Women's Day, so we wanted to celebrate all women, women of all creeds and colors and ethnicities. We wanted it to be for everybody. And we also wanted to celebrate women as workers, women who worked in the home and women who worked outside the home.
So Molly, I want to interrupt you here and just go back just a little bit. So
okay.
You went to the library. And
I didn't. It was a student project. 3 of the women in my class went to their children's school's library.
And they found there were only so many books that weren't even checked out.
They weren't checked out in 15 years. And some of them were probably so boring, you were just as glad they weren't checked out. But they were, some of them were biographies. Anything that had the word women or a woman's name qualified. So that's how few resources existed. And that's really what grew the National Women's History Project, because as we identified those resources, we were the single source supplier for women's history materials for almost 12 full years until Amazon came along, and then they could undercut any price we had. But the National Women's History Project, at one point, we had over $1 million worth of sales, and we had 17 staff. And it's part of why we have such an extraordinary legacy of work that we were able to do and generate. And now we put most of it up online, as do other curriculum developers, because teachers can readily find it. So,
well, in your opinion,
the story, huh?
In your opinion,
mm-hmm.
In your opinion, I'd like you to ask 2 questions. First of all,
okay.
Why women's history is so important, and who were some of your early supporters and mentors?
Well, women's history is so important because it gives us a sense of who we are. Our history is our strength, which is one of our slogans. And let's take Barbara Jordan, for instance. Barbara Jordan was this brilliant African-American girl in Texas. She knew she wanted to do something with her life. Her teachers knew, too, because she was so brilliant. But she had not a concept of what it might be. And then in either one of her junior or senior classes, an African-American woman lawyer walked into the class and talked about her life. And so for the first time, Barbara Jordan thought, oh, even though I'm black, I can be a lawyer. So the extraordinary importance of role models, the importance of seeing women out there in terms of industry, of invention, of science, of art, of all of it, is just essential. And it's just as essential for boys as it is for girls. Because, see, boys haven't been told the story of the female experience either. And so very often they can be disparaging of it because they don't have the information. And the earlier they have it, the better. Second graders happen to love Harriet Tubman. They're sure that if they lived during Harriet Tubman's time, they would have been like Harriet Tubman.
Molly, Molly, tell us who Barbara Jordan was and tell us who Harriet Tubman was.
Okay. Barbara Jordan was one of the major prosecutors in the what turned out to be the Watergate trial.
Oh, really?
She turned out to be one of the, she was elected to Congress. She was the first black elected to Congress since Reconstruction. This was 1972. And then she went on to become quite the leader in the House of Representatives. And because of that, she served on the Watergate Committee and was probably one of our most brilliant constitutional lawyers. Harriet Tubman was a nurse spy scout for the Union Army. She was an abolitionist. She's the one, if for those of you who saw the movie Glory and remember the they were warned that it was they were going to be annihilated. I mean, they were really warned that this was not going to go well for them in that one scene in the movie. And they say, well, we got this information from one of the spies. Yeah, that spy was Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman risked her life 23 times going back to the South. She rescued over 300 people, pulled them out of slavery, and she herself had escaped slavery. So she's one of those people that has courage beyond measurement. And then after she was no longer part of the you know, the Civil War, she established a home for old people in upstate New York, which I'm happy to say is a historic landmark today.
Well, it's just amazing. I mean, when you start hearing the history and you start hearing what some of these women did, and to think that it wasn't there for us at one time, that we couldn't understand it or discover it. What were some of the major challenges you faced? I mean, I know this was a whole new concept. I remember when we went to Sonoma State, I arrived there in 1973, and the first thing I ran into was women's studies, and I scratched my head. I said, I wonder what this is. And ended up going into the classes, and it changed my whole life. It changed my whole way of thinking.
Of course it did, because it asked new questions. It provided new information. You know, we were so, Mary Rustadter, who was one of the co-founders of the National Women's History Project, she graduated from UCLA, and I was doing a women's history slideshow one night that was from colonial history, pre-colonial history, Native people to the present. And you know, it was about 45 minutes. It moved pretty quickly because you could just kind of give highlights. And she was just in tears after it was over. She said, here, I graduated from UCLA. I had what I thought was a remarkable education, and I know nothing about any of these women. And because she was such a convert, she became the very best person to go forth and multiply and promote the concept of women's history. So, yeah, what we don't know, what I say to people, and I don't encourage people to make assumptions except for one, and what I'd like people to assume is that in every time period, no matter what it is, that women of all cultural groups have made major contributions and have moved history forward. And if somebody would like to challenge me on any, you know, pick a date, I don't even go care if you go back to the Middle Ages, because I can find the documentation of how much women have done and who we are in the world. And it's just in those 2,000 years of patriarchal misogyny really gets in the way of knowing the facts. So that's why we do women's history, because we want people to know, have real information. We want them to have a more comprehensive understanding of the complexity of history. You know, did any time period work the same for women as men? Often not. Did it work the same for people of different ethnic groups? Very often not. So it's just expanding your sense of being an American, of knowing your history, and of being able to celebrate it and feel stronger and braver, whether you're a man or a woman. So that's why we do what we do. I used to do a presentation on how I thought the knowledge of women's history would end domestic violence, because I thought if young girls and women could really know who they are and whose shoulders they stand on, they wouldn't allow themselves to be so disrespected. And if men really had the concept of the female experience and how powerful and expansive it is, they wouldn't do the things they do. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about that. That's very, very interesting, because every year what I've noticed, and I watch it very carefully, that you have a theme.
Mm-hmm.
And this year's theme is, nevertheless, she persisted, honoring women who fight all forms of discrimination against women. Mm-hmm. Now, the question that I have is, how do you decide on the theme? And how do you decide on what which women to pick? I mean, you have how many? I forgot. There's about
we have 15 this year. We're always trying to do just 10, but it's such a choice because these are all. I mean, for these 15 women, we had 50 others that could have been women. Well, it's almost the story of every woman's life. Nevertheless, she persisted. I mean. Didn't our mothers and our grandmothers and our neighbors and our aunts persist? I mean, how else are we here where we are today? But we selected the theme. We were going to honor women who fight all forms of discrimination because of the Seawharf Treaty that the United States hasn't signed yet. And we wanted to really celebrate women who work for women. But then when that incident happened with Senator Warren, when Senator McConnell wouldn't let her speak anymore because she was reading the letter from Coretta Scott King, and in it, Coretta Scott King was very critical of Senator Sessions, and so Senator McConnell cut her off. So what did she do? She went outside the committee room and read the letter, and you can see her doing this. You can see Elizabeth Warren reading Coretta Scott King's letter on YouTube. But when she stopped, in order to explain himself, McConnell said, "Well, I told her, and nevertheless she persisted." And of course, then that became the big tagline. Nevertheless, she persisted, and so we chose that as the introduction to women who work against all forms of discrimination because it's just so perfect. And this is the year that we're moving past Women's History Month. We're getting ready for 2020, which is the 100th celebration of Women's History.
Before we go there, Molly, I'm going to have to take a little musical break here, and
okay.
I think this is a perfect song to play. And then when we come back, I'd like to talk with you about the Me Too and the Black Lives Movement, if that's okay.
Okay, yep.
Okay, we're going to play a song, and I think this is perfect. When I think of Mitch McConnell, and I forgot all about what he did with Elizabeth Warren, we're going to play this song by Ellen Bookstill. It's called Hey, Mr. Politician, and I want you to listen to the words and hopefully make a comment after the song is over. And when we come back, folks, we are talking with Molly Murphy McGregor. She is the co-founder of the National Women's History Project, which is housed here in Sonoma County, Santa Rosa. We're going to take a musical break now. We're going to listen to Ellen Bookstill and Hey, Mr. Politician.
Okay.
Hey, Mr. Politician, don't legislate my love. You're not walking in my shoes. Don't hide behind your religion. It's my right to marry whom I choose. It's not your place to call me a sinner or decide who to have as my mate. Don't twist the words of the Bible. Hey, Mr. Politician, there's no debate. We already separated church and state. Your religion should never abuse or take away my freedom to choose. Hey, Mr. Politician, don't legislate my body. You're not walking in my shoes. Don't hide behind self-righteousness. It's my right not to give birth if I choose. It's not your place to turn back the clock to a time when I had no voice. Don't try to take away my right to have freedom of choice. Church and state, your religion should never abuse.
Oh, my goodness, I just love that song. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and with me on the phone is Molly Murphy McGregor. She is the co-founder of the Women's History Project, housed here in Sonoma County, Santa Rosa. Well, welcome back, Molly. So what'd you think of that song?
I loved it. I just love it when we tell the truth, you know?
Hey, Mr. Politician, get out of my body. I mean, I just love that. I mean, I don't understand. You know, I make a call all the time. If there's a woman out there who is against choice, please give me a call. I really want to interview. I want to find out what it is they're trying to achieve, because I think we all have the same goal, is quality of life. But I think the way we're coming at it is just a little bit different. Anyway.
Well, I also think it's obvious that a woman's life is valued less than a fetus. I mean, that's the premise of all of it. I know, because I come from a very strong family of Catholics, and in the Catholic Church, my sister had to make the choice several times about whether or not they were going to save the baby or save her, and each time they both came through it, she was stronger. So even though my family is very, very Catholic, and none of them would ever have an abortion, they believe in the separation of church and state. So even though they wouldn't have an abortion, they wouldn't stop somebody else because it's not their body.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's what choice is all about.
Right.
You make a choice. You know, I don't say I'm for abortion or against abortion. I'm for choice. And if there is a God that's going to punish a woman because she's done that, let her deal with it when the time comes. It's not my responsibility to save her from that. She has a right to make.
I don't believe in a punishing God, so
yeah,
I'm safe there.
Well, it seems to me that seems to be the ideology, that somehow this God is a punishing God, not a loving God.
No.
So it's very, very interesting.
I was brought up with a God that was all-knowing and all-loving, and if he was all-knowing, he knew that we were weak, so, you know.
Well, how's about this one? In God's world, all things are possible. If it's possible to create a safe way for a woman to have this procedure, then they should go forward. But
right.
I don't even understand why they're trying to stop birth control. I mean, that to me, all of a sudden, I go, wait a minute. You know, I can maybe understand. You know, when you're talking about the right to life and all that other stuff, but I can't fathom prevention. I really can't.
Well, I think it has to do with that there should be no pleasure in sex. But that's a whole other topic.
Oh, that's it? Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I'm sorry, folks. Sex is very pleasurable. Watch the Royals. You'll see how good it is. Anyway, I know you're doing a presentation. You're going to be doing something tonight.
Mm-hmm. With you.
And also, you're going to be doing something on March 15th, which I'm just looking at my notes here. But before we go there, why don't you talk a little bit about the Me Too movement and the Black Lives Matter movement? How has that impacted the National Women's History Project? I mean, what has that brought forward for women?
Well, we're all building on the work that preceded us. And I think the Me Too movement definitely built on the Black Lives Matters movement, because it's all about having voice. It's all about speaking out and saying, you know, I'm a person. I count. My life matters. And I think they've been so effective because of that. I heard a story the other day about a woman who was in her 90s, and when she was in the workforce, one of her bosses, you know, basically put her up against the wall and molested her. And it had taken her over 70 years to tell that story because she felt so humiliated and so embarrassed by it. And here she was finally free to tell her truth. And the Black Lives Matters movement, I mean, it's just right out there. Let's take a look at what's happening, you know, to black people, to black men. So get your attention. It gets you as part of that team. And then the Me Too, I mean, I was just astounded at the reaction. And I've lived a kind of a sheltered life because I've been the director of the National Women's History Project for 38 years. And let me tell you, the men that I work with are all the best. So I just think it's phenomenal. I think it's extraordinary and wonderful. And it just gives voice to to our real experience rather than the lies we're told by the politicians that lie to us on a constant basis.
You know, it was really interesting. You know, last week I had an interview with attorney Gloria Allred on. And one of the things that she was responsible for, that she brought forward, was getting rid of the statute of limitations for women who have suffered from rape. And when you talk about this woman, how it took her 70, you know, the embarrassment and the,
What had she done to bring this on herself? It's just amazing.
Right. And so because of that, to be able to remove that statute of limitations, which is, I think, was an amazing feat, that women can move forward even though it's been 70 years. And mm-hmm. that was the logic they gave, that they're so embarrassed they don't want to talk about it. And then the Black Lives Matter is a very, very important movement. And one of the things that I ended up getting quite a few emails, oh, my life matters and this one. And I wrote back. I said, you know something? Of course your life matters. But the mm-hmm. reason we're saying Black lives matter is because their lives have not mattered. And we're bringing it to the forefront. And we're saying that we want to acknowledge that Black lives matter and we support that. And I don't understand why that's so difficult for people to understand.
Well, you know, I think the people, when it comes to race, especially white people, get immediately defensive because they think you're saying something about them. They don't understand that you're talking about other people, their needs, how different life and history has treated them. Sometimes people feel immediately guilty because of white skin privilege. You know, it's all the complexity of that. But I think it's essential, given how polarized we are as a country and given how the president continues to increase that polarization, that we need to reach out to each other. And, you know, somebody says to you, well, why would you say Black Lives Matters? Then you have the opportunity to give them a real explanation. And then you can say to them, why does that phrase bother you? Then you get to have them be able to articulate how they feel left out, or they don't feel that they have a voice, or they're saying, oh, if Black life matters, does that mean white life doesn't matter? And, you know, it's not at all, but it's something we just really have to dialogue about. And the problem is sometimes we don't feel like dialoguing. Sometimes we feel like just saying to people, get over it. But it's not going to take us anywhere. We really and truly have to engage people who feel very differently than we do about things, and to ask them questions about their feelings rather than tell them how they're supposed to feel.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When the Black Lives Matter movement first came out, you know, I studied, being Jewish, I've studied the Holocaust very, very intensely. And one of the things that came up for me is how wonderful it would have been if the people came forward and said, Jewish lives matter. Maybe millions would not have been killed. I mean, you just, you know, it's very important that as a culture that we support one another, you know, and the divisions, it's not working. Well, you know, I know that you've got two presentations coming up, and I'm looking at the clock, and I'm telling you, the show goes by, boom. This is the fastest moment of time that I've ever experienced.
Well, so, the event at the museum is something that it's open to the public. If you're a museum member, it's free. If you're not a museum member, it's $10, unless you're a student, and then it's $5. But it's going to be... you know, there's going to be a reception where we'll chat with people and stuff about 6:30, and then the talk will begin at 7. And I'm going to do a PowerPoint on basically the 40 years that, because this is our 40-year anniversary of First Women's History Week, which happened here in Sonoma County.
Talk a little bit about what happened. But there was a march. There was let me just finish. And also, I have a poster that I never really understand, and that's the 1980 art show. There was an art show in Sonoma County.
Uh-huh.
So talk about those two things.
That was an art poster. Well, you remember the late 70s was a time when we didn't know we weren't supposed to be able to do stuff, and so we did everything. And when the Sonoma County schools supported our idea of having March be National Women's History Week, we did that for 2 years in a row. And the first year we had community resource women who went into the schools, and the second year we had a beautiful hometown parade. And I took those all of those ideas, all of the work we had done, all the resources we developed, I took those to a national conference that was chaired by Gerda Lerner. And there were women there who were friends with, you know, with the president. They were just very high echelon people. They knew the girls, president of Girl Scouts, president of AAUW, just these very women who had a lot of power and a lot of contacts. And there were nuns there, too, and nuns are the very best networkers in the world. So anyway, my idea of attending was to ask them if they would promote a National Women's History Week, because they were national organizations, and it was so successful here in our own Sonoma County. So they did. They went forth and lobbied at the state, local, federal level. And that February, I was the director of the Commission on the Status of Women, and I answered the phone, and it said, this is the White House calling for Molly McGregor. And I said, oh, one moment, please. And I put them on hold because, you know, they'd never called me before or since. But anyway, the reason they were calling was to say that President Carter was going to issue the first women's first presidential message for Women's History Week, and call the American people to recognize the week of March 8th. And there's a whole proclamation, and if you go to our website, you can see it. And right after that, Barbara Mikulski, who was in the House of Representatives, and Orrin Hatch, who was in the U.S. Senate, we had a female House person from the East, and she was a liberal, and then we had a senator with Hatch, who was a conservative male from the West. And they issued a joint resolution for Women's History Week together. And because we had such broad base from the most liberal to the most conservative, it was a huge win for us. And for the next 6 years, we went back to Congress every year because, of course, it was March 8th, so the date changed. But during that time, 14 states had declared the entire month of March as Women's History Month, and in 1987 we were able to get Congress to do the same.
Well,
so that's why since 1987 we've had National Women's History Month.
Well, I'm going to do something special. I'm going to clap, applaud you. Yay, Molly! Yay, Women's History Month!
Well, let's just remember how many of us were involved in this. I get so much credit for it, but trust me, this was way more than a team. This was our team, and then teams we didn't even know about, women all over the country that that did the work and continue to do the work today. And it's certainly not just women. Some men have written some of the very best stuff about suffrage. So it's a human process.
I'm sorry, Molly. I have to applaud you again. You did a great job. You spearheaded it, and yes, of course, there were many, many, many. I mean, myself included, all the women across the country that supported you. But you did an amazing job. Well, listen, I just want to make an announcement again that you're going to be Thursday, March 15th. You're going to be at the Sonoma County Museum that's located at 425 7th Street. There's going to be a reception. It looks like it starts at 6:30 p.m. and then at 7 o'clock, there's going to be a special PowerPoint. And tonight, you and I, plus many, many, many other women's groups, will be at the Sebastopol Library in Sebastopol, and that starts also at 7 o'clock. Looking forward to it. I'm so excited that, you know, it's been a long time since I've come out and done presentations, so I'm really excited about this. So as we end the show here, Molly, why don't you give your website and any last words that you would like to share?
Well, come to our website because in addition to women's history information about the honorees, about the theme, about anything you might want to know about Women's History Month, we have a whole array of lots and lots of information about the women's movement. So our website is www, and then N as in national, W as in women, H as in history, T as in project.org. And if you weren't able to write that down, you could just Google the National Women's History Project and it'll come up.
It'll also be on the website of Women's Spaces, womensspaces.com, and they'll be happy to list it. Also, all the events for Women's History Month are also listed on the website. Well, thank you from the bottom of my heart, Molly Murphy.
Well, thank you, Elaine. I look forward to seeing you tonight, Elaine Beverly.
And I just want you to know from the bottom of my heart how much I appreciate you as a human being, as a woman, and for all the work that you've done and continue to do in our community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
See you tonight.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
Well, folks, that's it for our show. Special thank you to, oh my goodness, Molly Murthy McGregor, co-founder of the National Women's History Project, founded right here in Sonoma County. Lots going on to celebrate. Go to www.womenspaces.com and see what is happening in Northern California. Also, the Gloria Allred interview is now online. For those of you who missed it, I'm very excited and very proud that I have been able to interview her. I mean, she is an example of a woman standing up for other women. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. And just FYI, when I come back next week, I'm going to be another year older. I can't believe I've lasted this long. A reminder, tell your friends, Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. This evening. I'm so excited I get to listen to my own program. I don't know about that. Half the time, I don't have the courage. Also, I'm available for speaking engagements. And if you have any birthday anniversaries you'd like to have on the air, please do not hesitate to email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. And remember, myself and Molly McGregor will be at the Sebastopol Library this evening at 7 o'clock, doing a whole thing, letting you know what's available for women in our community. Remember, our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that. This is Elaine B. Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.